From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Madeline Brand. Here in California, the governor and legislative leaders finally have a tentative budget deal. If lawmakers approve, the plan will use massive spending cuts to erase the state's $26 billion deficit. Californians are weary of these budget stalemates year after year. And as NPR's Ina Jaffe reports, there's a push to fundamentally change the way the state does business.
Marcella DeVoe is doing what many college professors do this time of year. She's got her laptop open on the dining room table, working on the syllabus for her fall classes in journalism and public relations at California State University at Northridge.
Here's one.
She finds an email from a student, one of many like this. It begins, "Professor, I'm freaking out.
I tried to register yesterday, and all the classes that I had planned to take are full."
With less money going to higher education, there are stricter limits on classes now, and without DeVoe's class, the student won't graduate. So the letter continues.
"What do I do? My dad is paying for my tuition and is going to be so angry if I don't graduate in a year and a half. I've cost him enough money already. Like I said, I'm freaking out."
DeVoe has gotten fed up with the way California allocates its money.
"Most decisions are made on these propositions that are written in a way that's very difficult to understand. And I think residents of California, including myself, have voted yes. But in retrospect, I don't know that we actually could figure out how we were going to pay for all of this."
So what does she think needs to be done?
"Wipe the slate clean, move everybody out who's had a chance, and let's start all over again."
Increasingly, Californians are thinking about making fundamental wholesale changes in state government. And last week, a couple hundred of them gathered in an auditorium in Santa Monica to talk about it.
"Congratulations for being here on a Friday night. That indicates your passion and interest in what's happening here in the state, or maybe it says something else about you, but we're all here."
Jim Wunderman is with an organization called Repair California. They're campaigning for a constitutional convention to totally redesign state government.
"At first, a lot of people scoffed at the idea, but no, you know, five budget delays later, $26 billion deficit later that nobody has a rational answer for, people aren't laughing anymore."
Writer John Gabry stayed through the entire three-hour meeting.
"I just got an IOU for a tax refund, so that kind of hit home in a way that, you know, it hadn't previously."
Something drastic needs to be done, he says. The question is, what?
"Then will it happen? I mean, I can see us not dealing with this and just having it get worse and worse."
And he's not sure that a constitutional convention is the way to go. First, voters would have to authorize it by passing a couple of ballot measures next year. Then the convention would meet the year after that. Then the voters could adopt the changes, or not, the year after that. Bob Hertzberg, head of another government reform group called California Forward, thinks the state doesn't have the luxury of time.
"We're running directly smack into the wall."
"So why wait," says Hertzberg. "Put a package of reform measures on the ballot next year, addressing things like California's super strict term limits and the requirement that the budget be passed by a two-thirds vote, and maybe something to put restrictions on the initiative process."
"So I just think time is of the essence with respect to California, and this gets us to the table quicker."
Voters have generally rejected government reform measures in the past, but after many failed attempts, an initiative that stripped lawmakers of the power to draw their own districts did pass last November. That might be a fluke, but some fed-up Californians are hoping it's a trend. Ina Jaffe, NPR News.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer. General Motors finally can focus the public's attention on its cars instead of its finances. The redesigned Camaro is generating a lot of talk and a lot of sales. NPR's Frank Langfitt reports.
Some of Greg Smith's fondest memories were in a Camaro. He was 13. A friend's older brother was at the wheel, and they were barreling across the desert outside Tucson.
"There's nothing like leaving your seat when you go over a little rise, you know, and even though you have your seatbelt on, you still get a little air, and you kind of feel like you're in another world."
But buying a Camaro was never practical. Smith is now 53 and designs commercial signs for a living. This year, he couldn't resist. He ordered his Camaro in February and picked it up last week in Maryland. The car is jet black. Greased metal rises off the back wheels like big shoulders, and headlights shaped like sunglasses stare out from the long hood.
I love the way it looks. It's all angles. It has almost a Battlestar Galactica, Darth Vader look to the grille in the front. There are not going to be any cars out there that look like this car for a long time.
This has been a dreadful year for GM. A forced bankruptcy, tens of billions of dollars in taxpayer money, you know the story. Now the company hopes the new Camaro can inspire customers like Greg Smith and help bring some flash to a battered brand. Dealers say demand for Camaros is heavy. Neil Copit handles marketing at Criswell Chevrolet in Gaithersburg, Maryland.
I wish I had 1,000 to sell tomorrow because I could sell them.
GM says it has 13,000 on back order. That sounds great, but Lonnie Miller says the shortage is by design. Miller works for R.L. Polk, an auto marketing firm.
They limit production in order to keep demand high so the dealers sell out of the available stock. You don't want to flood the market with this and make it a commodity car.
GM is marketing the Camaro in a number of ways. One strategy is product placement. The Camaro stars in the new Transformers sequel, and GM has crafted ads with scenes from both films.
50 years from now, when you're looking back at your life, don't you want to be able to say you had the guts to get in the car?
Of course, pitching the Camaro to young male moviegoers is easy. But how do you push it against the tide of environmentalism and concern over fuel prices? One answer, don't call it a muscle car. GM calls it a
21st century sports car.
That's Karen Rafferty. She markets performance cars at GM. Rafferty points out the six-cylinder Camaro gets 29 miles a gallon on the highway. That's not according to GM. That's from the Environmental Protection Agency. Scott Oldham edits Edmunds Inside Line, a consumer website for car lovers. Given the political climate, he says GM has to try to cast the Camaro in a greener light.
I don't think the guys in Washington that are, you know, writing the checks these days, they've been on record saying GM and American automakers don't necessarily need to be making muscle cars, gas guzzlers, and they don't think the American public should be driving them either.
Despite the Camaro's early success, Oldham says it can't save GM. It's a niche vehicle with limited base of buyers.
If they sell 75,000, they'll chalk that off as a big year.
The Camaro is what Detroit calls a halo car, ideally a flashy, hit vehicle that bathes the brand in a warm glow. Last year, Chrysler launched a halo sports car in the new Dodge Challenger. Ford did the same this spring with a redesigned Mustang. Oldham says halo cars can not only grab attention, but also lift worker morale during a tough time in the auto industry.
I think they motivate the employees of the company. You know, not everyone got into the car business to sell boring sedans to boring people.
And not everybody wants to own a boring car. Take Lee Fleischman. He's 25 and manages his family's bagel store in Bethesda, Maryland. A couple of months ago, Fleischman bought the V8 Camaro with a 426-horsepower engine.
As soon as I got it, my wife said she didn't really believe me that people were really responding to it. About 2 seconds later, a Porsche 911 Turbo comes flying out of nowhere yelling at me to slow down so he can take a picture.
Measuring the Camaro's success won't be easy. GM won't make its sales target public. But as Fleischman's story shows, the Camaro is doing something most GM cars haven't done in a while. Turn heads. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.
You can see the transformation of the Camaro at NPR.org.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel in Washington.
And I'm Madeline Brand in California, where it appears there will be a dramatic downsizing in state government. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and lawmakers in Sacramento have agreed on a tentative budget deal that will close the $26 billion deficit.
That deal did not include any tax increases, but it did include deep cutbacks that could be felt for years. John Myers of member station KQED has more.
After weeks of bitter fighting inside California's state capitol, there was relief last night in a deal to erase a massive budget deficit, a deal between legislators and Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
We have accomplished a lot in this budget, and I want to thank the legislative leaders for hanging in there and negotiating. It was like a suspense movie.
The theme of that movie, of course, depends on who you talk to. For supporters of government services, it may seem like a bloody horror film. The $25 billion solution is built on more than $15 billion in cuts, with almost two-thirds from California's public schools and higher education. State work furloughs will continue, the equivalent of a 14% salary decrease, and a $1.2 billion cut in prison spending may force the early release of inmates. The deal also includes a bitter pill for cities and counties, a $4 billion raid by the state of local property and gas taxes.
As this budget hits the street today and people look at it, I think Californians are going to say, how do we get in this mess?
Rich Gordon is an elected county supervisor for San Mateo County in Northern California and former president of the California State Association of Counties. He says the $4 billion hit on local government would force severe cuts in police, fire, and public works.
We will have no choice but to reduce services, lay off staff, and have direct impact on the people who need us most at the local level.
The L.A. County Board of Supervisors just voted to challenge the legality of some of the revenue transfer in court if the legislature approves the plan. But for all the temporary fixes, permanent changes are also on the way. Dennis Hollingsworth is the Republican leader in the California State Senate.
We have made significant reforms that will make government spending more efficient, that will root out fraud and abuse.
Democrats agreed to demands from Republicans and the governor that most recipients and caregivers in California's in-home support program be fingerprinted and subject to background checks. They also agreed to cuts in the health care program for poor children and changes in welfare rules that could force some recipients out of the system earlier. And if that wasn't enough proof of California's problems, the deficit agreement would also allow a new offshore oil drilling operation, the first of its kind in 40 years, and one rejected weeks ago by state regulators.
The proponents went running to the governor's office, and his proposal is, well, let's tack it onto the budget.
Bill McGavern of the Sierra Club says the drilling proposal, estimated to bring the state $100 million this year, is an end run around the state's environmental rules. If it all sounds overwhelming, it is. California lawmakers have now crafted two large deficit solutions in just the last 5 months, and few believe the state's economy has bottomed out, which may mean more cuts on the horizon. For NPR News, I'm John Myers in Sacramento.
As we just heard, Los Angeles County voted to sue the state if it goes through with its plan to borrow local tax dollars. One of the people who voted today to do that is Los Angeles County Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky, and he's here now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Madeline.
How is this deal going to cost you and L.A. County money?
Well, the state has made the decision that it's going to balance its budget, at least $4 billion of its $26 billion budget deficit, on the backs of local government. And they are dipping into our funds, our general fund, our redevelopment funds, and basically stealing that money. It's not their money. It's our money. It's locally generated. It's money within our control. But the state has, with the stroke of the pen, decided it's going to balance its budget not by bringing spending into line with expenditure, with revenues, but by taking money out of local government.
How much
money? Pathetic. We're talking at a local government, $4 billion in California. Our county alone will suffer a loss of somewhere between $300 and $500 million. The redevelopment scheme that they have proposed, which is unconstitutional. That's why I proposed and the board approved today the lawsuit against the state. Proposes to have redevelopment extended for 40 years without even making a finding of blight, which the Constitution requires. I mean, there's a whole bunch of gimmicks in this thing. And what's the most tragic about it is that it doesn't solve the state's ongoing problems. The state has a structural fiscal deficit that is caused by their spending more than they're taking in. You don't solve that problem by dipping into somebody else's pocketbook. What are they going to do for an encore next year?
So tell us how this will translate into direct cuts to services that you provided in L.A. County. What won't you be able to pay for if the state takes this money?
Well, counties in California, as they are in most parts of the country, are the providers of human services, health, mental health, child welfare. The kinds of things that the most vulnerable in our society depend on, and they depend on the county government. The local government hit that this state budget deal represents it falls heaviest on counties in California, the 58 counties in California. We are the largest. We are the largest county in the country. So our ability to provide mental health and health services, our ability to provide for children who are abused, and not to mention law enforcement and the other kinds of things that we do as a matter of course, are going to be compromised. To what extent depends on how our lawsuit fares, what the ultimate hit on our county is and on other counties. We'll have the same accounting to make. But it's not good news. It's nothing but bad news, and it's nothing but a retrenchment of government. You know, when your news report said that this is a restructuring and a massive cutback of state government, it's also going to result in a massive cutback in local government because they've decided to punish local government, which have Most of our local governments in California have prudently managed their fiscal affairs, and we're being punished for it because we have money in our reserves. We've kept money for a rainy day to ride out this kind of a recession, and now they're coming after that money, and it will prevent us from being able to do what we need to do to serve our citizens.
Well, obviously, the state was in a very difficult position. Karen Bass is the Assembly Speaker, a Democrat. She's from Los Angeles, and she signed off on this. So did she consult with you, and did you talk with her about this?
I talked to her about it. I talked to a number of the legislative leaders about it, and I know they were in a tough position. I don't think you can argue that point. Just looking historically at this, when we had two major recessions in my lifetime in California, one when Ronald Reagan was gone.
And that was L.A. County Supervisor Zev Yaroslavsky talking about the budget. We lost, looks like we lost the ISDN or the satellite line to him, unfortunately, and we'll try to get it back a little bit later. Again, Zev Yaroslavsky, a Los Angeles County Supervisor, talking about suing the state of California for its plan to raid local funds, county funds, to balance its budget and to close the $26 billion deficit. And we'll have more on that story as details emerge.